all set up an arrangement, as we can see. And so, you know, what we're going to do basically is, you know, have it where our speakers are going to present and speak. We're going to ask you to save your questions, not till the very end, after each person speaks on their subject matter. They will, you know, we'll pass the mic, and they do want us to speak into the mic because we are being, recorded for Russia. And, the other thing is, at the end, you know, they do request that we do fill out the evaluation. So they can get a temperature check on the value of this session and the subject matter, and we'll go from there. So in terms of introduction, I'm Greg Freyer. I am the Director of Sales and Marketing for Academic Arrangements Abroad. I have been in the travel industry about 25 years. I'm new to Arrangements Abroad. I've only been there about 6 months, but it's not my first time here at the rodeo because I've been working for tour companies in the past that have had me working on the nonprofit side of the industry. So it's honestly been about eight years since I've last been to ETC, and it's great to be back. And what's really interesting and what's really very pleasant is to see so many familiar faces from 8 years ago. It really speaks to the sense of community that this network is. And so it's kind of like going back on going back to college and seeing all the fraternity brothers, and so it truly is a stroll down memory lane. We have a wonderful panel here, three speakers. We almost had four, but we're down to three. We were going to try to get an airline, but that didn't work out. This is a subject matter on everybody's favorite subject: air. And I was thinking the other day how interesting air is in this day and age. As I was sharing with Leo before, dating myself, but about 30 years ago, I remember going to JFK for like the first time and seeing how travel was so different. I remember people were dressing up. I remember how you were served food. I remember that you didn't have to pay for. I remember how row 20 was non-smoking, and row 21 was smoking. It was very different. It was a luxury, and now it's a commodity. We get on and off airplanes like people get in and out of cars. And with that, the airline industry has boomed. With that comes its own set of challenges, as any industry faces, especially in a 9/11, post 9/11 existence. Everything has changed even more. Airlines come and go. They're big, they're small, they're merging, they're coming into business, they're going out of business before you realize they were in business. They are challenges with fares. Why is it cheap today, stupid expensive tomorrow? Why do I have so many incentives to try to fly with one airline over another? It's getting incredibly competitive. There's so much out there to know. There's so much out there to digest. There's so much out there that we face in terms of trying to educate ourselves in how do I keep up with this? It's almost like technology. It's outdated before it's dated. So it's really a matter of just trying to get a sense of, we speak, from the travel industry, this is our world. We know it for what it is. We know based on what we read, we deal with travelers. We're travelers ourselves. We're a little bit more ensconced in dealing with airlines and the air situation, but some of our travelers are not. So oftentimes people turn to us as tour operators, as travel planners. What do I do? What makes sense? Why does this routing do this? There are a lot of questions behind, some of the information that we put forth. So, with this, the session, Air Industry Update, cheap airfares don't always make a happy traveler. And I think it's fair to say expensive airfares don't always make a happy traveler. There's a lot that goes into making a happy traveler. But in order to dissect that, and I think to just hone in a little bit on what we're here to focus on is to try to kind of take one part of it and dissect it. So we have some industry experts. We're going to update you on things like product, pricing, promotions, programs, again, in an effort to educate you and address your air issues. I'm sure collectively from different sides of the fence, everybody may have something different to bring to the table, so we can, in an open format, have a question answer session along those lines, and just provide you with some knowledge and tools that will empower you to determine, how to best, address the air situation, especially in respect to your travelers. So in introducing our panel here, we have three wonderful people from three different sides of our community here. We have Paula, who is a representative from a Road Scholar, so representation from tour operator. We have Leo from Exodo, which is a service that works directly with your clients, and I think he's got the biggest job of all, and he's even got show and tell. So this is a very interactive, cutting-edge seminar, you guys. And then we have Crystal, who is the alumni travel director at UCLA and their program. So I'm going to turn the microphone over to them so they can just briefly introduce you, and then we'll go from there.
Hi, everyone. Paula Pettengill. I may have met some of you before. I've had the honor to be asked to be on the airline panel in the past with ETC. I wasn't here last year, so I missed you if you were here last year. What I bring to the table and sort of why I'm here is I really feel, sincerely, been with Road Scholar for a very, very long time. I think it's 30 years this year, and had never intended on working on the airline side of the house, so to speak. But I migrated there with, over the many, many years, Road Scholar identified the air travel as being an essential element of their tour experiences. Back in the old days, and we'll get into some of the business models, what we've done has really changed. And so what I want to say, the reason I'm here, is I definitely have made a lot of bad decisions and mistakes in the airline world because it's changing so much and I've learned so much. And I think what the moral of the story is, there really is no right way when you're putting your trips and tours together, but being very attentive at the wheel with regard to the air transportation. Because about 10 years ago, Road Scholar realized that our customer satisfaction barometer was really being impacted by sort of not paying enough attention to the air experience. So we brought in-house, Road Scholar has their own, and I oversee their airline division. So we do all of our own, probably very unique here is our own buying. So we're actually buying directly with the airline. We also service the air ourselves. We actually do all the airline ticketing ourselves. So we do both ends. We buy the air, we price the air, we ticket the air, and we do it under the umbrella of Road Scholar. So I'm hoping today I can add value and answer any questions you have. And last, what they've asked me to do on this panel is to share with all of you sort of Road Scholar's best practices as it relates to air and how we navigate it. It changes every couple of years, and it's always very timely on what's happening. And so I'll share maybe the top five things that I thought maybe you might think would be interesting to take away today.
Thank you, Paula. I just want to thank everyone for being here. I'm Leo with Exodo Travel, and I actually really appreciate those who come to an air session because we all know it's a difficult thing to work with for tour operators, for suppliers, for everyone. So I view this almost as a support group more than anything else. So I'd just like to start with, my name is Leo, and I book airfare.
Hi, Leo. Yes.
So I'm actually a sales and automation manager at Exodo Travel. And my job is to be on the sales floor every day. I do sell airfare quite a bit as part of my role, but also really just make sure that the quality of all of our services is up to par for our providers. And as an entity, we're the sort of the outsourcing. So Paula does a lot of her ticketing in-house, and we are actually an entity who is taking over that role for a lot of different companies because it's too much of a headache, it's no longer profitable, it's just really not what most tour operators and suppliers, DMCs and colleges, it's not what they want to focus on. So we have a number of different capacities that we work in as a wholesaler, as a retail air desk, as it were, and just really here to provide that service. And so I guess my perspective today will be the guy who's in the trenches every single day selling airfare, dealing with the difficulties, the problems, all of the things that most people don't want to deal with, but really this is my business to do those things. So if I have any, if I can answer any questions at all or, you know, create a new perspective on it, I hope I can do that. So thanks.
Hello, everyone. I'm Crystal Palette-Aragon, and I'm the director of UCLA Alumni Travel, and I'm here to provide sort of the planner's perspective. I am not an air expert. I wish I was. It would make my daily life a lot easier. But I've been with UCLA for about 22 years, and we operate 50 trips and work with about 10 tour operators on an annual basis. And we spend a lot of time at UCLA managing our travelers' expectations when it comes to group air, sort of what group air can and can't do. And there's, quite frankly, quite a lot of educating going on. You know, what are the different airlines, what are different ticket types, and what's the cancellation penalties and classes of services. And it's hard for us planners because we're okay. So I'm just really looking forward to hearing from our air experts here today, Paula and Leo, and knowing what you tell us today will change tomorrow. That's just how it is.
Tomorrow, 5 o'clock. Oh, I'm on. Okay. I was going to say, without further ado, and as Leo indicated, you know, yes, in the trenches, he is the kind of the front point person when it comes to, you know, dealing with air travelers. How many, just out of curiosity, how many utilize the services offered by Exido? I want to date.
Fresh people.
You did. Yeah. You see?
This is great.
And what, Pauline, when I hear that, the one thing that comes to mind is something very specific. But for you personally, and you are engaging Leo in that process, what's your takeaway?
I'm on the spot now.
To our speaker this morning.
Yes, yes.
Without the ADHD and the Diet Coke.
Pauline from the University of Washington.
Oh,
so a friend referred me, so I felt very safe to call Leo up. And I tried to look into, I haven't done a personal vacation, my own flight, for years and years. And so I got online, I started looking around and all the differences and what had seat assignments, what didn't have seat assignments, what price, how many miles. It was too confusing. And I'm busy. And it's like, I don't want to do this at night. You know, I'm tired. And so I went to Leo and, you know, he pulled it together for me. And I did a little bit of my own research. And I thought, oh, my goodness, you know, he can get me this that I couldn't get direct. Heck yes, I'm going with Leo. So.
Yeah.
And it was just the trust, too, of having someone that was an expert in that area, because I was not.
Yeah. There's great value in service. And what was coming to my mind was the fact that, just to digress a little bit, my experience, coming from New York to St. Louis on Sunday took me 3 cities and 9 hours. And part of that problem was, you know, Newark-based United Airlines and just the craziness of a Sunday morning. But with it's a little technicality. I'm a pretty seasoned traveler, as many of us are, many of your travelers are. Pretty seasoned traveler, go to the kiosk, type in my 6-letter confirmation code, see agent. The worst 2 words that could possibly come up when you're trying to make a plane with a security line of hundreds of people deep. But I was there 1 hour and 45 minutes early. I saw the person next to me said, well, to see agent was, there's the end of the line. I missed my flight because of this. But my point being, online, I was on hold for 45 minutes to get to somebody who then tried to assist me for 15 minutes, who then had to hand me off to a supervisor who sent me back to a kiosk, only to find out I'm in, but I'm not in because it's within 30 minutes I didn't check in, so the flight is closed. Had to go from Newark to LaGuardia via Uber at 90 miles an hour to fly to Chicago to sit for 3 hours to get to St. Louis. So service goes a long way, and you didn't speak to a person at an airline and pay $20 or $30 for that processing fee. So,
thank you, Greg, for that case and study, and also Pauline for the kind words. I do appreciate it, and that's a perfect example of all of the issues that one can. There are a million scenarios that one can not expect. So I actually just want to start the talk giving some context to fares in general, how pricing works with the airline, and also some of the new trends that we're seeing. So I actually want to ask the room, does anyone here, outside of some Exodo folks that I know, work or have experience in a GDS? So Apollo, Sabre, Amadeus. Okay, one person? Very, okay. And most of us then are just booking our flights online, I assume, is their common way. Yeah, okay. So that's good. I actually, just to understand how pricing works for the airline utilizes a pricing strategy called yield management. And it's actually a really rather ingenious way to price a product because it's a variable strategy that can react very quickly to market conditions and to consumer demand. So it's something that they can use and change very quickly, as we all know how fast fares can change for a variety of reasons. But it's very flexible, and it works really well with a fixed amount resource. So was anybody in the first plenary session with Jeff Hoffman, who was the guy who created Priceline? I thought it was very interesting that he came and visited, because here's a guy not of the industry who came to understand yield management and figure out a hole that the market was not serving and made billions. So the guy really made quite a bit by understanding the expiration nature of airfare in general. And so he actually talked really briefly about when the door of the airline, of the plane itself is shut, if someone is not sitting in that seat, that's lost profit for the airline. So basically yield management is a way to manipulate so that doesn't happen. They want to maintain a system of distribution that balances purchases over time and for a variety of folks, if that makes sense. So just I have a metaphor here today only because we couldn't have PowerPoint in the room. So I apologize for the nature of my metaphor. But this right here is essentially what I look at every single day. I'm looking at basically code in Amadeus when I'm booking flights. So this basically represents the price for one airline. So say I booked a flight from Denver to St. Louis, and there's essentially a bucket of pricing that I'm dealing with when I'm looking to book. So the airlines will sell tickets at a low rate. I think over here we've got $200 is the base fare of the airline, and essentially they will have maybe 7 to 9 seats at that price. And once that sells out with our consumable goods, this is our seats, it's going to move to the next price bucket. So this is the way that when we're looking online, we might see a price maybe 11 months in advance. It's sort of at the lower end. But as seats begin to sell out on the airline, we're moving into higher price brackets and higher fares. It's an interesting way to do it because they can manipulate it based on seasonality. So if you're trying, does anybody try and book a trip in December to go see family? It's always ridiculously expensive. And even if you're booking way in advance, you know that the plane is not full. It's not possible. But what the airline does is they essentially take away some brackets. The plane could have a number of seats available, but you're automatically into the higher pricing structure. And they do this based on demand. So if the demand is high and they know that people are going to buy, they can remove some brackets and they can sell at a higher price. If the demand from the consumer is low, they can reintroduce the brackets and try and get people to fill the seats. So it's a pretty smart way of doing things. And it's basically the airline, on its very root, is trying to answer the question of optimization. So given the operating constraints of the airline, how can they make the most amount of profit possible over time? And this is the system they use. So I'm looking at this all day long. It's lovely. The beauty of this is it allows them to, it allows buyers to essentially self-sort. So you're going to have folks who, like many tour clients, they're going to want to book way in advance, maybe 11 months, 10 months in advance for their tour. But then you'll have some folks who, they're going to want to buy higher price tickets that are flexible. So they'll go for a different fare type, or they want refundable tickets. So looking at the higher price brackets in business class generally. So there's a lot of segmentation of the market. And of course, we have the greatest represented one, which is the person who's buying solely based on price. And that's what I wanted to discuss a little bit more today is the sort of bottom shelf brackets of the person who's really looking for the cheap airfare, which is most of us, right? But the issue is that the consumer is looking for the cheapest airfare without the knowledge of what that actually means. And it means different things nowadays with some new developments. So we've seen two trends in the airlines over the last few decades. One is bundling of ancillary services. And that's all the things that when Greg said when airfare was really in its heyday, you just expected to have good service, good seats, good food, and we know that's not the case anymore. So the airlines do bundle services, but obviously you pay for them. So do we have any premium economy junkies in here who enjoy the extra leg room and paying for those types of flights? Okay, we get that a lot. So those are kind of the new way of, that's the most popular fare with the ancillary services attached to it. So with this higher fare, you're going to get priority boarding, you're going to get a free checked bag, you're going to get access to lounges perhaps. So you can get those services, but now, of course, you're going to pay for them, right? And so the opposite trend that we're now seeing is the unbundling of services. And this is the latest and the greatest. Can I ask who in here bought a ticket to the conference on a budget airline? I thought that would actually be more. That's not so bad. Okay, so a budget airline would be Frontier, Southwest, Spirit. Usually they're distributing their products only on their website. They don't have the same distribution networks as what we call the legacy carriers. So they got the big boys who have been in the game for a long time, United, Delta, American, exactly. The legacy carriers are kind of freaking out on one level right now because the budget airlines are coming in, they're coming in hard, and they're making a lot of money. And it's estimated that like 25 to 30% of the business in the States is on budget carriers now, if not more. And so I think that's an accurate figure about that, probably even more. And so they're trying to figure out what they can do to get the price down because they just can't be competitive with those budget carriers. And so the new model that they have is to unbundle the services and offer the latest and greatest, which is basic economy fares. You'll see I laid it out in front of some people you might have to share because I didn't have quite enough. Sorry for that. But this is an outline of some of the basic economy fares for the legacy carriers. And it is basically, so where we have some added services in our nice model here, basic economy means this. You do not get anything, right? You get a seat. And this is the argument of the airline, is once the person gets on the flight, they get the same actual service, which is to get from point A to point B, as the person who's paying more. But all of the things attached to that that we come to expect are not available. So no checked bags. You who are the last person to get on the flight, you'll be lucky if you have overhead bin space now, or if you can even have a carry-on. What else? So there's
no advanced seat assignments.
So no advanced seat assignments, no voluntary ticket changes, nothing. It is the most restrictive fare on the planet.
You stand.
Yes. This makes sense on the legacy carrier side of things because they are speaking to the budget market. They're going to win clients back from the budget airlines. But why is this a problem for us as tour planners? I mean, we are essentially trying to curate beautiful experiences to these remote and awesome destinations. And the first and the last experience is the flights. Even though we hate to think about it and tend to ignore it, it is those parts of the trip. So how would we feel when our client is going to show up at the airport, they've booked the cheapest ticket possible, they're feeling great about it, and then they're treated like the most bottom shelf consumer on the planet. So my point is that as as tour planners, operators, and as air experts, we have to be aware that these fares exist. It's very important to know the difference between the fare types and what the client is actually getting for the service. That's about really all I have right now. The one other thing I wanted to comment on is that we have the basic economy fares, the cheap economy, which is really the subject matter of the presentation, but just to know that there is, on the opposite end of the spectrum, the higher price fares exist, which give you everything or allow you to hold space for flights that are well in advance. So it's not, I just wanted to make sure that those also exist. So again, the trick is to know and have the expertise to understand that these exist and what the client's actually getting. So
questions regarding some of the subject matter that Leo just touched on? No questions at all. Interesting. Well, let me ask you, Leo, where does JetBlue fit into the scheme of things? Are they considered budget? Are they considered full service? Because they really are the poster child for the balance between the two. People love JetBlue. They introduced TVs first that were free, you know, things like that. I mean, it seems to me that those are the that business model is the real emerging.
Absolutely. JetBlue and Southwest. Southwest has been doing it for a long time. So they actually do operate in a GDS, so they can be distributed sort of as like the standard carriers. And that is part of the game. They realize that, okay, well, we're going to offer folks stuff, try and keep the price down and see what we can come up with. So it's going to be hard for the legacy carriers to know how to respond to that, because usually the budget airlines are offering just the basic fares, and then you have to purchase your seat, you have to purchase your baggage, the luggage, and everything like that. So they are a different model for sure.
Yeah. One moment.
Why are the legacy airlines not making money and Southwest and Budget and those places are? Sorry, I wasn't talking.
Why are they not making money?
I mean,
they've redirected their, from my opinion, is the legacy carriers have expanded their horizon. The international routes are the routes that are most profitable to them. And so they're sort of allowing within the U.S., the Southwest to have their time, and Frontier and Spirit, because they're much busier growing their international networks. And so the Deltas, in Rhodes Scholar's case, we'll work with, I don't know if that answers your question. They've allowed these little carriers to take the U.S. market because it, frankly, is not that profitable to them, and they're profit-focused.
Even with a decrease in fuel costs and things like that, I have a hard time believing that they're losing money on that domestic.
It's more an opportunity cost, that like the Deltas and the Americans and the Uniteds have a greater ability to make profits flying their long-haul flights than their domestic flights.
I guess I've always thought that legacy carriers have the union deals are so much different, that they have this heavy, heavy burden of pensions that
they
Southwests
do.
Don't have.
Right. I mean, even the on the international routes, take a Norwegian airline, which I wanted to speak about. Has anyone ever traveled on Norwegian yet, the new sort of low-cost international carrier? So what's interesting is Rhodes, I never thought we would start working with them. I don't know why, but at a recent international conference a few years ago, some of our partners overseas said, why aren't you guys really need to start looking at the low-cost solutions internationally? So Norwegian, one thing we did, interestingly, this past year is we aligned with Norwegian and put together an educational tour in the French Caribbean in Martinique and leveraged there and used their Boston, Baltimore, and New York routes to the French Caribbean. And what caught us off guard, even, all the research we did with them in meetings, the price was right. So in that case, boy, it was cheap. We bundled the air into the tour, and they flew off the shell. Every single departure date we had was full because the price point was just perfect. Literally, I think it was $200 round trip, you know. But our participants were caught off guard with when you boarded the aircraft and we did not communicate that to them, they had to pay for their water.
Literally. Yeah.
They had to pay for their water.
Literally. Yeah,
right.
It's great
right.
water, though. It's really
it was really good water.
Delicious water.
so refreshing. Yeah, so the low-cost carriers, so I think someone else had a question,
Richard.
Though. Yeah.
Richard, can you just bring the mic back to the gentleman right here?
If we want to go back to get an airline ticket that has all the bundled stuff back in it, mm-hmm. how much more is it going to cost now from the basic fare? Is it 20%, 30%, 40% more in order to get what we used to consider standard?
I mean, you can answer that if you want, because it changes by the day. It's really based on the yield of that flight.
Absolutely correct. So it depends on how many seats are still available on the aircraft. Again, if there are only a few premium economy, which is usually premium economy now, like Delta Plus, United's premium economy, if there are less of them on the flight, then generally the price will be a little bit higher. So it does change depending on the availability of the flight. And it very much is not standard across the board. Actually, premium economy products are still fairly new in the industry. They've been around for a while, but the airlines have different ways of seeing them and dealing with them. A lot of the U.S. carriers it's going to be, probably $30 to $70 for a premium economy seat upgrade. We're $150 on an international flight. That's just sort of an average. But that model, I think seats is a really good topic because that is really the product itself, right? There's all these ancillary services now attached, but hey, your clients, they just want a seat before they get to the airport, know that they're sitting next to their husband or their kid. It's not easy anymore. That's a really difficult thing to manage. So that on our part, that's one thing that we're always educating the client about is what is available, how we can purchase that, how we can secure that, what price it's going to be at. It's probably our number one question and one of the most important things to address with the client.
Mm-hmm. Pardon the pun, Iceland has obviously been a hot destination recently, geologically speaking and tourism-wise. And we mainly send people on Iceland Air, but there's a lot of interest just in the lower rates of WOW Air. Mm-hmm. And you know, people say, "Oh, why aren't you sending us on WOW? It's so much cheaper." I mean, what is Iceland Air doing, differently from WOW? And how are they reacting to stay competitive in the market with the lower rates of WOW Air? Certainly getting a lot of attention.
I mean, in Rhodes Scholar's case,
you're on.
One of the advantages, I guess, in the case of Iceland or an airline like Iceland Air, is they have so many USA gateways, right? Hello. They'll also allow you to create a through fare from your home city. And that's probably one of the things that we find for our participants who tend to be a little bit older, they're spending a lot of money to go wherever. To start in your home city is really a value proposition that you really, really should be thinking about. So in a WOW model or a Norwegian model, you've taken right off the table or you've created two airline tickets, which is a nightmare. It really is a nightmare, and we're really mindful of that. So while the Norwegian model was really exciting to use them to Martinique, and I suppose for a while for Iceland, it's really advantageous to have someone get on a home city airport in wherever, Chicago or Walla Walla, Washington, and connect and have that, what we would call a through fare. So I think, are you all familiar with those? I mean, that's really, as a tour operator, Rhodes Scholar, and you're all creating tours for your alum, that is to miss your experience because your domestic flight was delayed is a real negative. So working with an airline like Iceland Air for us has always been they keep their prices really nice. They're really priced. They have excellent onboard service from the customer perspective, and you can create those through fares. To really weigh that in.
That's a very good comment. What Paula is talking about is the art of airfare, which is really understanding the alliances and the partnerships between airlines and using those through fares to get someone from point of their point of departure. The other side of that is the service that the airline can provide. So a lot of the budget airlines do not have very good service for travel agents and for air experts like ourselves, where if we run into an issue, a delay, a schedule change, we don't have someone necessarily that we can go to resolve that problem. And so some of the larger airlines that have these alliances, they've also got established sales channels or support channels that where we have a designated rep from that airline that we can go to fix an issue. And that's really, really important when you're dealing with all the problems that can happen with flights.
Anything else on that subject matter with regards to what we've just touched on? Yes.
For any operators in the room, are you communicating to the traveler, hey, this is a budget fare or a basic fare, therefore you're not getting water or seat assignment? Are operators notifying our passengers of that? There's operators in the room.
That's a really good point.
We deal in group airfare, so we're not booking individually. So we can't even book that low fare, because what they do for us is they average out. You know, if I'm booking 20 seats or 10 seats, my minimum would be 10. But I will help individual travelers book their individual airfare so they get there either with the group or before the group or all of that. And I would certainly always do that hand in hand with the client for sure, so that they knew exactly what they were getting. And usually the people that I'm booking individually want either an upgrade or business mm-hmm. class or things like that anyway. So yes, absolutely.
I mean, to your point, the communication, one of the, at Rhodes Scholar, we've been doing, again, sharing best practices. We've shift our model all the time because of the changing face of the airline. So as an example, we may, you know, years ago or not too long ago, we were doing more group airfares. You know, you travel together as a group. That model is rarely used now, but we still use it sometimes. So if we're going to do maybe a group in Egypt where there's many internal flights within Egypt, and it's cost effective for the tour to have the travelers all arrive on Egypt Air from New York, we will be very clear about why we're doing that, because otherwise, to the average person, why are we traveling on Egypt Air? I can get to Cairo, you know, many other ways. So we're mindful of when we're choosing a carrier that restricts someone from being able to make a choice or to not originate in their home city with these through fares, we disclose heavily so the consumer sees the value proposition in that. We have some programs in Southeast Asia where we have multiple countries tagged together, and Air China is an airline we'll use. And we'll be very upfront with them right at the point when they're enrolling in a tour. Not the negative side of you can't use your points or you can't use your preferred airline, as we talked about in the plenary this morning, how people have choices. So I'd say probably 10% of our international programs, we're restrictive on the air, and we communicate why, maybe 10 or 15%. The rest of the tours fall more into the model of sort of to your bucket, we'll say sort of two buckets. And right now, when Rhodes Scholar puts together a tour, just like you guys are doing, to our constituents, about 20% of them will say, we're going to do our air on our own. Thank you very much. And they, who knows what they do. And what we're clear about when they do that is the program begins at the hotel in Dubrovnik. See you on day one. So 20% take themselves right out of the grid. The other 80%, probably right down the middle, and this has been consistent for the last 2, 3, 4 years, is about half of them say, just give me your air model and I'll take it. So Rhodes Scholar decides how you're going to get there, what you're going to pay, and we communicate that to them early on. And sometimes it doesn't allow for through fares, but we're taking care of it. the other half of that 80%, so 40% of our international passengers are now in this, we call it custom independent air, and these are people who really want choices. And we haven't figured out how to, I mean, we feel that it's really helping our organization grow, and because travel is so important that people, but people want choices. So we have a custom air desk that works with our travelers to allow them to pretty much make all of their own choices on their own, and it's relevant to them. So to this morning, talking about relevance, and that custom air allows them to arrive early, stay later. So I would really, I would think some of you are going to continue to have challenges with that, right, where you have a group block where you need to meet probably a minimum with the airline. And they're really, the airlines are really restrictive with those. So Rhodes Scholar is working hard to not block their air and fight with the airlines. To literally, I mean, a big part of my job is to fight the battle. So I'll a week doesn't go by where I'm not head-to-head with whether it's Qantas or Air New Zealand or any of them and argue for our participants to not have to be so restrictive with them, because this bucket thing just doesn't work for a tour operator. You're planning so far in advance. So you, whoever you're working with, make sure that they are fighting the battle for you, because the airlines do want your business. So I always surprise myself with that. Half of the times I do win. So you can, you know, fight for what you want, and it's balancing having custom air for your passengers, and then and that price point, which sometimes you really need to really do a really, really custom trip with complicated visas and the like.
Just to quickly add to what Paula had to say, speaking for the tour operator side as well, there is that segment of your audience that finds comfort in that packaged air, because a lot of times that comes with the meet and greet service at the airport. It comes with the included transfer. And when you're dealing with a demographic that wants to be looked after a little bit, sometimes that is the deciding factor of if they're going to take care of me from step one, I'm in. So there's great value in that, as well. To that point, Paula, I mean, we're just segueing really quickly here. I mean, is there anything else you'd like to touch on in terms of how, when, like Rhodes Scholar specifically, how air factors into the strategies of your tours?
It's very much. So the tour, before we even begin, I mean, we're getting better at this. Air used to be the last decision we made. Literally, we have a huge, development department that's designing these great tours. And then the air department, my team, would come in at the end and they'd say, what's the price of the air? And in fact, a third of the time, had they started with air, we might have either changed even the day of the week sometimes. I play a lot with day of the week to really get the price down. Certainly, we've reversed itineraries is a really common thing. We'll take out an internal segment. We'll add one to add value to a tour. We'll offer a program with an extension because the air has a free stopover. So air is becoming a very strategic part of our tour planning. And as I said, there's no right answer, but it's rolling up your sleeve. And so that's one tip I'd give you. The other is we have no allegiance to any carrier. Our opinion is don't, get in bed with, just think Qantas Airline or just think a certain airline, because we, as a nonprofit as well, we have no allegiance to anybody. At the end of the day, it's what's going to make the tour operate best for the participant. So we'll work with Al Al on a couple of, but yet we won't use Al Al in Israel exclusively. So it's keeping, there's a lot of really good airlines out there now. Of course, as you mentioned, there's the, the alliances, but, we're not big enough to just, only work with the Star Alliance. We really, it's about the tour, and it's about what's going to work for that tour. TAP for Portugal, we've, done some great things this year working with TAP. They've opened up, really good fares and really good, that I wasn't really giving them much business before. The flip side, we're working a lot with Air India for decades. They were the airline of choice for Rhodes Scholar, but as sort of being pushed a little bit by the consumer demand, and we were blocking space out of New York, you know, because they had the nonstop to Delhi, and that kept the price down. But in fact, you can talk to Emirates, and it's maybe a little bit more money. You can get a really nice, and then we have custom air now for all of our India programs. So we've sort of thrown the model last year that's been our model for 20 years to block space with Air India, and we've thrown that model out, and we really haven't seen it. Perhaps the programs are doing better because we're offering more choices with these carriers in the Middle East that are really attractively being, they're more attractively priced. They have a lot of U.S. gateways. They have tons of add-ons all over the U.S. So it's really working with your whoever your airline people are to make sure that they're helping you to add enough value to your international trip, because the air is sometimes 25 to 30% of the cost, maybe. So make sure you give your passengers enough value.
Just a couple of things I wanted to add from the planner's perspective. So we plan our own culture programs here in America, and about 3 years ago we stopped offering air to them because we're not the big companies that can go in and negotiate rates. So we found that we actually were asking our travelers to spend several hundred dollars more to get secure the tickets ahead of time, what they can buy themselves later. And I would say that only about 50% of UCLA travelers take our quote-unquote group air with our tour operators these days. Most people, they do their own air. And the WOW air that you were talking about, we have a trip to Iceland this summer. I would say half the group bought air because it was promoting at the same time as you can get a $297 round-trip ticket. And yes, they don't get water, but let me tell you, they don't care. You know, from Los Angeles, that's a fabulous rate. I will say the cheap carriers can also work to your favor. For example, from Los Angeles, you know, business class can run you anywhere from $4,000 to $5,000, but on Norwegian, if you get their premier cabin, it's around $1,600. You don't get the food, you don't get the service, but you get a comfortable seat. So I often tell my travelers to take a look at that if they're okay with connecting then somewhere, probably Oslo or Stockholm or Copenhagen. And the last thing I just wanted to mention that I think is so important is transfers. It's our responsibility to get our travelers to the starting point of the trip, whether they take our air or not. So it needs to be really clear what are the transfer times. There should be many options. And they shouldn't feel penalized because they're doing their own air. That's part of the group experience. That's part of the tour experience. And you may not make money on your transfers, but it's so important that they feel that you care about them getting to the starting point of the trip. And I think all our tour operators can do a better job of providing that information and also many, many transfers, and it shouldn't be that expensive. So we have to get away from the mindset that they're land travelers, they're on their own, because they're not. They're still taking our tour.
Out of curiosity, just to put it out there, we'd love to hear from you. What are some of your air challenges as it speaks to your programs, whether that be a specific destination, whether that be, you know, complicated air schedules? I mean, what is it that baffles you and your travelers alike? Is there anything that comes to mind? Or are there any success stories that come to mind that are worth sharing for others to take away?
I just want to share what I consider good customer service that just happened. I was on a trip down to Antarctica, and half of my group did their own air. And I had a couple that stayed in Ushuaia for 3 days later. The tour operator continued to monitor their air. They're now 3 days after the trip is over, and their flight was canceled. They contacted the travelers and helped them to rebook their flights, even though they were land only. This is the last thing they remember from this tour. This is what they're talking about. Not Antarctica. The fact that the tour operator. So I think we just have to really invest in caring for our travelers with their land arrangements as well, not just the tour.
I just have a quick comment about all of those travelers who are not utilizing the services and deciding to book on their own. There is some perils in that we just have to consider. One of them is the reading the fine print principle with airfare. So as we know, all of the different fare types have different rules that are associated with those fares. So some of them will be a $200 change fee. Some of them will be refundable. There's just all of these different variances in terms of the rules associated with the ticket. Here's the clincher. If you're doing a multi-segment itinerary, I'll give an example of, we work a lot with LON Airlines in Chile. And we're developing these very complicated multi-segment schedules throughout South America using LON. Well, one problem with LON is that inside their Chile market, which is where they're from, where the company is based, they also offer the nothing fare, right? And if you have a multi-segment ticket, say this is actually a great representation because each one of these is a flight, right? If you take the nothing fare and add it to the ticket itself, the most restrictive rules of the ticket are going to apply. So even if they're flying out of JFK on LON on an international ticket where usually you can make a change and it's a little bit more flexible, if this little guy is hidden in there, then they now have a non-refundable ticket. Say they need to make a change during the trip, they can't do that. It would be essentially a throwaway ticket. So if this flight is sort of one of the second or third flights on the ticket, and they can't make any changes after it, they would have to buy new flights during the trip. And imagine how much that could ruin the experience of the entire journey, because who's going to fit that bill now, right? This was their mistake. They booked this on their own. And of course, booking on their own, again, the one thing that people tend to look at as non-informed consumers is price. That's what we're used to comparing online. We're just looking at the price. Okay, that looks pretty good. I like that airline. But they don't see all the little perils that are involved. So it's our job as air educators, if you will, to make sure that these perils are clear, that we try and avoid them, and we just, you know, create the best product possible for them.
So just to add, I mean, Rhodes Call has been, it's really important that we, and I think we're all in this together, our customers, constituents, yours, they aren't buying your experience to buy an airline ticket through whoever you, I mean, the airline ticket is just a necessity. So, you know, pushing the air sales is not something Rhodes Scholar is doing. What we are doing, though, is making ourselves customer-centric to the needs that they have for traveling. And, I mean, we've maybe gone a little too far in the sense some people outsource and maybe they'd use a company like Exito. We've decided still to keep it in-house. And I think while we're maybe, you know, a little bigger, the point is that taking care of your customers and making sure you get from whoever you're buying your air from all of the information, because it is so meaningful to them, the participants. And then when the emergencies happen, we've decided to we do all the emergencies ourselves. So if someone gets stranded on their flight is canceled, they call actually someone who's on staff or at our company. That's something you have to have. You have to have, I'm sure you get it, but make sure your travelers have someone to call to help them. I mean, the airlines should be helping them, but sometimes they just need someone on the other end validating that they're doing it right. Go to the counter, ask for this. Really push them, because the airlines really can come through in the end. And what we've been told from our constituents is when they've had the worst experience traveling with Rhodes Scholar and we've helped them, they've come back. So those are the ones that really have become loyalists for us.
Extending that a bit, we think that the service, the customer service element is the number one. And that was a great session today from the speaker to speak to that. And for us, you know, being airfare advocates, we are both partners, but also, moreover, advocates for clients with the airlines, because there's just so many scenarios and problems that can occur. One of them with my colleague, it was a good example today that we actually explored, where a client had booked these very high-priced business class tickets, I think to Africa, $30,000 he spent, and ended up canceling the trip, was going to use that flight credit for a future trip, storing that credit. Well, that credit is valid for only a certain period, and of course he made the mistake of coming back to us 2 months after the credit had expired. So imagine just seeing $30,000 go poof, right out of your wallet. He was not a happy camper. So again, as an airfare advocate, we're like, we don't know if we can fix the situation, but we have a rep, we're going to go to them, we're going to see what we can do. And essentially, after a lot of pressure on our part, this was with Delta, I believe, they were able to reinstate the flight credit for him, which is completely abnormal because they don't bend rules that often. Those rules exist for their purposes. So it's just really important for us to try and act on the customer's behalf and do our best to fix and solve problems. And that's how we create loyalists or the zombies that our lovely speaker was talking about.
Crystal, any final words or as a planner? Or anybody else? I mean, is there any, we have just kind of a minute or two here to wrap things up. Any subject matter that we can touch on really quickly that hasn't been addressed that could be a concern or a hurdle?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. So we're calling it an air reference sheet. So we have, somehow or another, 10 disappeared, so we only have 10 there. So as we go around the room, when we get to the 10th person, if I can have your business cards, if you don't get one, I'll make sure to email you tomorrow. And it's just some good stuff, what we're seeing happening. And what's interesting is Cuba didn't come up. So I just want to, I don't know if any of you are doing trips in Cuba and whether you're finding that commercial air to Cuba is something that excites you. It excites us. I mean, I think it is exciting that the airlines are, they probably opened up too many routes. I think they're starting to pull them back a little bit, or they're changing the size of their aircraft because the demand isn't meeting the supply, but primarily because of the hotels, I think, in Cuba. Yeah.
One final, absolutely.
Again, just thank you so much, everyone, for attending. I am, and a lot of my colleagues are airfare nerds. We dig this airfare thing, and we work with this airfare thing a lot. So I know we're kind of all in brain melt phase of the day, and we all need some cocktails in us, and then we're going to get our thinking juices together again. But if at any point during the conference, if you have a specific question about flights or even a problem or scenario that you've encountered, please come up and see us. Please talk to us. We'd be happy to brainstorm, to think about it, to talk about it. If we can help in any way, we'd love to do so.
Do your business because we do our own air, but I'm more than happy to share some of my experiences and some of my knowledge with all of you. So,
well, thanks to our panel for their expertise and their sharing of it. Thanks for your interest and your questions and your participation. You know, we just scratched the surface of such a big. It's a day. Yeah, it literally is a day. I mean, we go on and on about things like customer service and baggage and complexities and things like that, but it's just a little minuscule part of a necessity. And I think the biggest thing for the challenge that we face is operators and planners who are so ensconced in making sure our travelers have such great experience. It's that air segment that's out of our control, and it's the first step of the trip, and it's the last step of the trip. And unfortunately, sometimes things go wrong, and it can taint things a little bit. But that's